Meeting is now being recorded.
Good day, everyone, and welcome to the RDS Who Is To Plenary Meeting Number 10 on October 12, 2017 at 12:30 UTC. In attendance today, we have Alan, Catherine, Dimitri, Erica, Volker, Thomas, and we have no observers at this time. From ICANN staff, we have Alice, Jean-Baptiste, Lisa, Steve Conti, myself, Brenda, and I'd like to remind everyone today's call is being recorded. Please state your name before speaking for transcript, and I'll turn the meeting over to you, Alan. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The first item is welcome, and I won't ask for changes to statements of interest because we only have new statements of interest. There are still a number of people who haven't returned them, who didn't return them while we were in Brussels, including myself. I am now told that ICANN would prefer a written signature and sending it in, presumably by paper or fax, if we still have fax, but they will accept an electronic signature. I don't know whether electronic means you have to paste on a picture of your signature, or they will accept typing your name in the slot as acceptable. Does anyone from staff know which of those electronic signatures are acceptable? ICANN accepts your name typed in some cases, but I don't know if they're accepting it in this case. Do we have any clarity on what electronic means?
I have to be honest. I'm afraid I don't have that clarity, but I can go back to legal and then ask for clarification. And with respect to your item number one, I think that if you scan the document and send it back to us, that's sufficient as well. There's no need to fax it.
Scanning
thank
is
you.
Also. All right. Thank you very much. I said fax because from a legal perspective, fax is considered legal in some cases where a scanned document is not, apparently. And I don't know how onerous they are considering this. The other part of the question I asked regarding SOIs is both SOIs, both signatures on the two documents seem to be affirming that you understand the conflict of interest. The one on the SOI also covers the accuracy of the SOI. I don't understand why they still want the conflict of interest, which seems to be replicated on the SOI signature, but apparently they do want both signatures. So we will comply. The first substantive item on the agenda is scope and objectives, and I will turn it over to Lisa to go through them, and I do have a number of comments, part of which I did write in an email earlier today for many of you, or yesterday for some of you. And I'll introduce those as we get to them. Lisa? Is Lisa with us?
Thank you, Alan. Yes, I was waiting for the scope to begin projecting. Lisa Pfeiffer for the transcript. So what you have in front of you is the objective scope and objective table as it ended up on the second day of your face-to-face meeting. Each of the objective text is the clean version of the changes that were applied during the two-day meeting. And if you recall, on the second half of the second day, as you did some exercises on beginning planning for each of the objectives, this is actually the objective text that was displayed on the wall as you were doing that. Alan, did you want to go walk through the objectives one by one?
Yes, and I'm trying to find a copy I actually wrote on, and I seem to have lost it overnight. So if you can start, and we may go back to the first one if I have any comments. Sorry, I'm somewhat embarrassed, but I cannot find the two pieces of paper I wrote on, but I'm looking for it as you speak. So if you can start on that one, yes.
Sure. So the first objective is the objective to examine the implementation of the first review team's recommendations. I believe the wording has been fairly stable on this one for a while, but I'll read it out. Consistent with ICANN's mission and bylaws, Section 46E4, the review team will, A, evaluate the extent to which ICANN org has implemented each prior directory service recommendation, noting differences, if any, recommend between the recommended and implemented steps. B, assess the degree to the degree practical, the extent to which implementation of each recommendation was effective in addressing the issue identified by the prior review team or generated additional information that's useful to management and evolution of who is, that is RDS, and C, determine if any specific measurable steps should be recommended to enhance results achieved through the prior review team's recommendations. This includes developing a framework to measure and assess the effectiveness of recommendations and applying that approach to all areas of who is originally assessed by the prior review team as applicable. And I think the major change in your face-to-face was the addition of that last sentence. That was in reference to the suggestion that Susan made about how effectiveness might be applied, and the decision was taken to include developing that framework as part of actually achieving this objective.
Yeah, thank you, Lisa. My question was just on that sentence. There is an applicable at the end, so that's the escape hatch for some of the recommendations where it really doesn't. I'm not sure we can define effectiveness when you know we were told to take it seriously. You know, this should be strategic or change the reporting structure. I'm not quite sure how we can define effectiveness in some of those, and some of them the implementation is not done. But I wonder if we're going to go out of this meeting and start asking people to start looking at the individual recommendations, when are we developing that framework? I'm going to have a similar question when we start going to the detailed timeline. There's a lot of things listed on the timeline, and it's not clear when we're going to do that. So I'm a little bit at a loss to know, are we stopping and going to en masse develop that framework before we go ahead and do any work at this point? Is that what this is implying? I know Susan's not on the call, which is unfortunate. Do you have any wisdom to add?
So if you're asking me, this is Lisa again.
Yes,
I think you have the working definition of that framework from Susan. I know it was distributed on the first day of your face-to-face and didn't really receive any focused attention. You could either look at that framework as the first part of your actual effort on this objective as a group or within a sub-team, or you could look at it prior to your planning. I think what you're going to next is actually planning the effort involved in each of these, and it sounds like the question is whether you need to understand that framework better in order to complete the planning.
Yeah, I would think we will have to do that as a group before we split off into little subgroups, because that would lead to at best a varied framework and at worst people with completely different interpretations of what they should be doing.
So I think that could be a use of next plenary call.
Okay, I would suggest we may want to do that. And if you could do an action item to ask Susan to be in a position to lead that. And let's go on to the second one now, unless anyone has any other comments. I see no other hands.
All right, I'll go to the next one then.
Yep. Yes, please. You can skip out reading the first couple of lines, which are pretty much the same for all of them. So just get to the substance.
Sure. Will do. So consistent with the bylaws. This one I have to read out.
Go ahead.
Bylaws. The review team will assess the effectiveness of today's Who Is, the now current GTLD RDS, including cumulative changes made to the then current RDS, which was assessed by the prior review team, by A, inventorying changes made to Who Is policies and procedures since the prior review team completed its work, B, using that inventory to identify significant new areas of today's Who Is, if any, which the team believes should be reviewed, and C, determining if any specific measurable steps should be recommended to enhance effectiveness in those new areas.
Do we have any idea when that inventory will be done? So my recollection is that's a staff action item at this point.
So this is Lisa. That would be part of actually doing this objective. So in the planning phase, perhaps you would identify that that's a staff requirement and the time frame when you would like to have it.
And that's certainly
staff would work to achieve that target.
Okay. I thought that was already an action item out of Brussels. I may be wrong, though. I think we did discuss that it would be a staff function, at least at the first cut, to do the inventory. So if there isn't an action item, could we please agree to put that on? Erica says we discussed it but not decided about the time frame. I think we did decide, though, that at the first cut, it would be a staff responsibility.
Yeah, this is Lisa. That matches my recollection as well, that it would be a staff action. However, the team still does have to actually agree it's an objective and plan it out before the objective starts. That doesn't mean staff can't begin on the inventory knowing
right.
That's what you want.
Yeah, if you can formally or informally come back someone and give us an idea when that's reasonable to be done. I don't think there have been a lot of changes in policy or implementation other than the direct things as a result of the review, but that's just my recollection. All right, seeing no other hands, let's go on to the third item. I think we have tentatively agreed that we can remove the should review. I've received no other comments from any other team members who are not on the call. So let's go on to the third one. I do have several comments on that one.
All right. The third one is, again, consistent with ICANN's bylaws and mission. The review team will assess the extent to which the implementation of today's Who Is, that is the current GTLD RDS, meets legitimate needs of law enforcement for swiftly accessible, accurate, and complete data by A, establishing a working definition of law enforcement used in this review, B, identifying an approach used to determine the extent to which law enforcement needs are met by today's Who Is policies and procedures, C, identifying high priority gaps, if any, in meeting those needs, D, recommending specific measurable steps, if any, the team believes are important to fill gaps. Note that determining which law enforcement requests are in fact valid will not be addressed by this review.
Okay, thank you, Lisa. I have two questions. One is, we start off by using the expression the legitimate needs of law enforcement and we define it. And then about a sentence or so later, we said we will identify an approach used to determine the extent to which law enforcement needs are met. Is that the same legitimate needs identified above, or is that a different definition? I think it is meant to be the same needs as we defined in the previous sentence or previous part of the sentence, in which case I would suggest we say to which these law enforcement needs to make it clear that we're not coming up with yet a new definition other than the legitimate ones. If any, unless anyone has an objection to that. And Catherine, you're the author, so if you do, please speak up.
Yes,
and
Catherine,
Carlton says plus one. Catherine, go ahead.
What I put in is the part on swiftly accessible, accurate, and complete data. What you're just saying is that under small b, we should say to which these law enforcement needs are met by today's US policies.
That, to make sure we're talking about the same ones.
Yes. No, I think that's perfectly fine.
Good. Okay, thank you. So we'll make that change. The other question I have is the last sentence. Note that determining which law enforcement requests are in fact valid will not be addressed by this review. I don't know what valid means, and therefore I'm not quite sure what that sentence means. Are we talking about the leads, the needs, the requests which fall outside of our definition of the legitimate needs? Or I'm a little bit at a loss. Volker, go ahead.
Hi, it's Volker speaking. I've understood this term to mean that it's not our job to tell law enforcement what their needs are, basically. So they put forward a need, and we are not to determine whether that is a need or not. So that's what I think valid means in this case. So if they say, for example, they have a need for all registrant data around the world, underlying who is data for privacy proxy services, whatever, it's not our job to tell them, can you get that for certain cases and not for underlying who is data. That's not our job. Our job is just, are the needs that they have put forward met or not, and not comment on these needs that they are putting forward.
But thank you, Volker. But is your understanding the only needs we will assess are the ones that were defined earlier in that sentence as the legitimate needs?
I think that's not the question that the word valid asks in this or answers for us. I think the question put before it is quite clear that their word needs, they say that they're legitimate, and we take that as face value. We're not to make assumptions about their claim of what their legitimate needs are. I think that's what's meant by that valid here.
All right, but we are defining legitimate needs earlier, and that's an assessment I think we can do. I agree that we are not commenting on whether needs are valid, but we are not going to assess the various needs that may or may not be valid that law enforcement may or may not make. Are we all agreeing on that? That Catherine provided what seems to be a reasonable definition of legitimate needs, that is swift access, swiftly accessible, accurate, and complete data. And we will assess to what extent WHOIS provides that. But we're not going to go any further. I think we're all saying the same thing. I just want to make sure that we're not going to enlarge the scope as we go forward because of the lack of clarity on what valid means. So if everyone's happy, I'm happy. We have Catherine and Lisa at their hands up. Please go ahead, Catherine.
Yes, hi, this is Catherine. Just to say that I agree that we, as far as I recall our conversation, we came out with the common result that we would not assess, that we would agree that the needs that we have identified are the ones that we put in the definition, and beyond this we would not assess the legitimacy, either of the needs or of the law enforcement agency or of the specific request, because that's beyond the scope of this exercise, and that's what that sentence tries to explain.
Okay, so I think we're saying the same thing.
Yeah.
Lisa, go ahead, and then Erica.
I will yield to Erica. I only put my hand up to give voice to her comments in chat.
Okay. Erica, do you wish to speak? We cannot hear you at this point.
I think Erica said that she would have trouble speaking because she has low bandwidth, but I can read out her comment.
Okay.
ICANN will have to judge sometimes certain law requests. Valid is a good indication that ICANN may have to refuse sometimes requests.
Yeah, and I have no problem with that. I just want to make sure that we're not trying to assess the other requests, which may or may not be valid, which fall outside of what are the definition we're using of legitimate. If we all agree on that, then I think we're safe to proceed. The next two items are the ones that were the continuation of that sentence, and you will recall we had a discussion much earlier in our process about whether in the sentence the legitimate needs of law enforcement, comma, promoting consumer trust and safeguarding registered data, whether the legitimate needs was modifying all three or just law enforcement. And I went back to the original affirmation of commitments, which made no mention of safeguarding registered data. That was added during the CCWG accountability movement of the AOC commitments into the bylaws. But it was the sentence that they had what made it very clear that they were not trying to assess the legitimate needs of promoting consumer trust, but just asking whether who is promoted consumer trust or not. And I think we have somewhat of a problem, again, like in the previous one, determining what the legitimate versus the non-legitimate needs promoting consumer trust are. So I would suggest in this case and the next one, we go along with the implication of the affirmation wording and remove the reference to legitimate needs and just focus on consumer trust and protecting registered data. And does anyone have any comments on that or concerns with that? Erica, you have your hand up, but I don't know if that's an old hand. And she said she agrees with Alan in this case. Catherine agrees. And we have Dimitri and Carlton. All right, so Lisa, if we can, when you go through these now, if you can revert to just whether we are addressing consumer trust and safeguarding data and not reference the legitimate needs of them. And perhaps you want to read it out either as it is or on the fly change it as you wish, but with the understanding in both cases we're removing legitimate needs. Lisa, over to you.
Thank you. So I believe how it would revert would be, so for example, under original issue, it would say whether it promotes consumer trust, whether its implementation promotes consumer trust. Is that
so.
How
yeah.
you think the question is?
That when I was writing my email, that's the way it pretty well had to be phrased, because otherwise the ing ending didn't make a lot of sense.
Right. Okay. So whether its implementation promotes consumer trust, and then that would be reflected in the reframing of the objective that consistent with ICANN's mission and bylaws, the review team will assess the extent to which the implementation of today's who is, the current RDS, promotes consumer trust in GTLD domain names by... Is that correct?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, we use the word enhance consumer trust, but I see no reason not to use the actual word from the bylaw and say promote.
Okay, and then a similar change to the next.
That's correct.
The next item. So whether its implementation safeguards registrant data.
Correct.
And then a corresponding change to the text.
Yeah, it's interesting. I have absolutely no recollection of the CCWG adding that phrase, but apparently we did. All right. Any comments on either of these two? If not, we'll go on to the next one.
And no further comments on safeguarding registrant data?
Yeah. We don't know what it means, but it was added, and we will dutifully write something about it.
Okay. That brings us to an item that you discuss dropping from the review as an objective, but providing rationale in your report. And so for the terms of reference, a brief statement was suggested that the review team will not conduct a review of OECD guidelines as suggested by ICANN's bylaws, section 463, because they do not appear to be applicable to today's WHOIS, which does not protect the privacy of transborder data flows. And in
privacy
framing,
or, that should be an or, not of.
The privacy
not,
of
does
trans-
not protect privacy or consider transborder data flows.
Well, it's the privacy of the flows that are not protected, correct?
No, it's also privacy of the data. The bulk of the OECD guidelines are on protection, on privacy of the data, but they also consider transborder data flows. We can refine the wording of that as we go along. I think the intent is understood at this point.
So one question that I would have about this phrasing, and maybe you want to further refine all of these rationale statements because they're fairly brief. So the bylaws actually ask you to consider the guidelines, and it sounds like you have actually considered them, but then reached this conclusion.
Right.
So,
I think there was certainly general agreement at the face-to-face meeting and in prior discussions that we don't know why this was added. It doesn't seem to be applicable, and therefore we don't want to focus a lot of effort on it. But
so I guess what I was wondering is if it would make sense that the rationale state that you have considered the guidelines but decided that you'll not conduct a review.
A further review, yeah.
Right.
Okay. We clearly need a little bit of wordsmithing, but I don't think there's any disagreement, so you want to keep a flag there that we need to clarify the wording or enhance the wording. But I don't think we want to try to do that on this call. I'm happy to work with you offline on that, and we can come up with something to propose.
So we'll take an action on that then.
Yeah.
I see Eric is typing here.
Okay.
And Volker has his hand up.
Volker, go right ahead, please.
Yes, if I recall correctly, I mean, the conclusion that we came to at the face-to-face was that the OECD guidelines are not directly applicable to anything other than state actors. And while that is correct, we have to consider that, of course, the guidelines are then used to create laws that then in turn might have effects on private entities and ultimately ICANN registries or registrars indirectly. So the OECD does not have any direct impact, but it may have indirect input. I'm not suggesting that we should knock at each country's implementation of the OECD guidelines, because that would be a task so momentous that it would probably take us years rather than months to complete. It's just that we, what I'm trying to suggest is that we do not set aside the guidelines, but we use them as guidelines, as in what the underlying principles regarding transporter data flow and sexual private data are that are contained therein, and therefore then review how, who is conflicts with them, or meets these requirements or guidelines. I think that would be our best way forward of dealing with it while still taking the on the problem head on. Thank you.
Thank you, Volker. As you were speaking, I realized something, but first to clarify, Stephanie did have an intervention at our face-to-face saying the OECD guidelines, in fact, do make recommendations for non-state actors, and therefore we cannot claim that they are not applicable at all. However, given that we know the current implementation does not provide any level of protection of the data that is stored within the RDS WHOIS database, that there is current activity going on to address the GDPR issues within Europe, that the PDP is charged with creating a replacement which will have to factor in regional laws and issues such as transporter data flow, that it is therefore out of our scope. So due to the other ongoing activities that are overlapping it and have responsibility of addressing the OECD guidelines or further activity, we really, it is out of scope, and therefore we're deciding that we are not going to focus on it right now. Does that sound reasonable? I think that actually covers why we're not doing it, whether they apply or not. Volker, go ahead.
Yes, I would agree that something along those lines would be the appropriate solution for us. I wouldn't necessarily say that it's out of scope, but I would just, as you said, point out that there's currently work ongoing. I would propose that we point out some of the issues in our report where we believe that current WHOIS would have issues with the guidelines if they are if they were to be transposed or taken literally. If they were directly applied, for example, then A or B might be a problem. I think that analysis is something that we can do, and without proposing any remedies for that, because that would then be, in turn, the work of the ongoing work of the GDPR review and the RDS working group as well. So we just should say there are problems, but there's work ongoing to review those problems and point out those problems. So we are not making any recommendations as to what should be done as that is all.
Okay, thank you.
Which is out of scope, not the review itself being out of scope. So we a review, not in depth, and then point to the work that's ongoing and say that making recommendations out of scope because there's work ongoing.
Yeah, no, thank you. Yeah, no, the word out of scope is not right. It is within scope, but we are choosing not to address it this go-around because of other ongoing work. But we will summarize the fact that the current WHOIS is rather deficient in addressing the guidelines in any case. Catherine, go ahead. Do you still want to speak, Catherine? You lowered your hand.
Yeah, sorry, I lowered my hand again because I think we're coming to closure on this point. I just wanted to, I did go back to the guidelines and checked, and there are specific recommendations in there, and each and every one of them is addressed to states, to the member states of the OECD.
Okay.
So there's nothing in there for non-state actors. Of course, it can serve as inspiration, but as Volker was saying, it requires implementation, and that can be quite different, and the principles are extremely high level. So I'm just wondering what the usefulness would be of us engaging in this type of assessment and how we would do it in practice, because, that, I think, requires some legal expertise. And what we had, we're coming back to this. We've discussed this before, and what we agreed before was that we would refer to the fact that different parts of the community have identified different issues surrounding data protection and privacy, and that we just want to highlight this fact without taking a stance, and that there is work ongoing to fix this, which we're not interfering with. But if we go anywhere near having our own position on this, then I think we do need some sort of legal advice and a more in-depth look, because here I come back to a very important point that Susan Kawaguchi raised earlier, which is that if we go into substance on any of these points, then we need to take a look at them and we need to take ownership, and otherwise we cannot make any sort of judgment on them. If it's just to say, okay, we take note that other parts of the community have raised issues and we don't take a position on the legitimacy of these issues, and we note that there's processes ongoing to address them. That I would feel comfortable with.
Thank you. I can certainly live with that. I don't want to really go into whether the guidelines are applicable to non-state actors. Stephanie made a very strong statement that there were parts of it which said we need to encourage the adherence to the guidelines by non-state actors, and I don't think there's a lot to be had over us having that debate, since I think we all agree we are not going to put substantive work into making recommendations, if for nothing else than the ongoing work. So I think being silent, we cover that. All right. Lisa and I will work with that, and Erica has said she'll work with us, and we'll have something ready either for the next meeting or prior to it. And if we can go on to the next item, Lisa.
The next item is actually the last objective being further developed, and that is consistent with ICANN's mission. And I'll skip the boilerplate stuff. The review team will, to the extent that this is not already covered in prior review team recommendations, A, assess the effectiveness and transparency of ICANN enforcement of existing policy relating to who is RDS through contractual compliance actions, structure, and processes, including consistency of enforcement actions and availability of related data. B, identifying high priority procedural or data gaps, if any. And C, recommending specific measurable steps, if any, the team believes are important to fill gaps.
Any comments? I have none. Seeing none, Erica says okay. Let us go on to the next items.
The next two items are, again, items where we decided not to actually have a specific objective for a further review, but to make a statement both in the terms of reference and then, again, presumably in your reports. The review team will not conduct a review of RDAP at this time because policies have not yet been developed to enable assessment of the value and timing of RDAP as a replacement protocol for WHOIS. The review team will not conduct a review of the WHOIS protocol at this time because activities are already underway to replace the WHOIS protocol with RDAP.
Yeah, I don't think we can definitively say replace it with RDAP. Drew, I would just stop at replace the WHOIS protocol. It's clear there aren't a lot of other options, but I don't think the PDP has made that formal decision, and I don't think we want to raise that controversy that seems to be there among at least a few of those people.
So delete the phrase with RDAP.
I would
leave it more open-ended.
Yeah.
And again, my assumption is that for these two items, as well as the OECD item, the report can actually give more about the rationale for not reviewing these in detail, should you wish.
Indeed.
This is just the rationale given in the terms of reference.
Indeed.
And then the last one is actually an item that was merged. It was internationalization. Or internationalized domain names, and that we agreed in the face-to-face that was actually part of the first objective of looking back at the implementation of the first review team's recommendations on IDNs, or it could be part of the second objective, which is looking at anything new that needs additional consideration.
Yeah, it's Alan. I did spend a bit of time looking at that and wondering, do we need to actually mention it in the first section. And I came to an interesting conclusion. Number one, we don't. And when you look at the three recommendations that were made last time that are under the heading of IDN, Internationalized Domain Names, in fact, only the first of those three is on internationalized domain names. The second are on internationalized registration data. And internationalized registration data applies to non-IDN names as well. So if someone registers a name in China, but an ASCII name, we still have an issue of contact information or the name of the organization or the name of the registrant being using internationalized character sets, which is not IDN, but is internationalized registration data. And the second two of the recommendations, despite the title that was used over all three of them, are not IDN, but are explicitly talking about internationalized data. So I think we can note in our report that their title was wrong, but the recommendations already completely address those. So I think we're okay in simply folding it into the RT1 recommendation, to the review of RT1 recommendations. If anyone has any comments on that, I see nothing. And Carlton says, that's why we agreed to look at internationalized registration data. And in fact, Carlton, that phrase is used in the second two recommendations. It's just not used in the title. And, I don't think we need to worry about what title they use to cover three recommendations. I believe we need one more item, though, because we decided de facto that we would assess the bylaw and make necessary recommendations for revision if necessary. So I think we do need a scope item that will address that. And Carlton says, good catch. We did discuss it. We just never actually wrote the words down for it. But we all agree that that's something that we should do within our scope. And, in fact, the bylaws explicitly say that that is within our scope. It's not said in the section on the who is review, but it is said in the general section. So, Lisa, again, I'm happy to craft something with you, and we'll present it for the next time.
So, Alan, just for the record, so Jean-Baptiste can record it as an action, you and I will work together to craft text for an additional objective that the review team will assess the bylaws.
Correct.
Very good.
And there is a reference somewhere in the bylaws to us doing it, so we can reference that. We'll find it when we do the work.
So that brings us to the end of the table, and
yep.
I believe there's probably an action here that I can or go ahead and apply the edits that were agreed during this call and send this back out to you, and we have two action items to, two action items to refine some of the text. And then also an action for Susan to help lead a discussion on our next plenary call about the framework for
right.
Assessing effectiveness.
Yeah. May I suggest, in lieu of refining this table again, that we cut out all of the boilerplate that was put into the terms of reference when we were still developing this and replace it with new text? And that we do any further commenting in regard to the actual text in the terms of reference. There's no point in not doing that step now and getting that part done, I think.
So focusing on what's the third column, the center column of this?
That's correct.
Got it.
Not sure if that shrinks or increases the terms of reference, but it gets it one step closer to us being able to finalize that.
And one further question about that, Alan. The last column here actually says day one results. It should see day one and two. But do you want that column deleted as well? I note at some point the team does have to prioritize the objectives that it's agreed to. But I don't think this column is helping you at the moment.
No, I don't think so. Certainly, Lisa, if you want to clean up this document just so we file it away and have it for reference, that's fine. I have no problem with that. But let's, as part of the overall process, then incorporate it into the terms of reference. It probably makes more sense to have a final clean version of this and then incorporate. Don't think it's a lot more work to do that either.
It isn't. In fact, I believe that Alice has already begun incorporating this in the working draft, so great.
Alice should be focusing on what we're saying, not typing. All right. Any further need to continue on this item, or we can go on to the next one? And the next one is objectives, expressions of interest, and first pass planning assignments. And I think Lisa is also going to lead this. The leadership team and staff reviewed the volunteers of who volunteered for what. We attempted to assign teams that were of moderate size. We were looking for at least three. In a couple of cases, we volunteered people even if they hadn't volunteered themselves. But I don't think I don't know if that chart reflects that, but if anyone has a problem, we can address that. We do have a couple of teams that we are looking for someone else because then we did not have enough volunteers on it. And as we go through it, Lisa will identify those. We did have a little bit of discussion, but I think we need more of exactly how far we are going to be going on this with these teams and what they will report back. That discussion perhaps we want to defer until we look at the work plan because there are a lot of details in the work plan that have to do with that. But that's something we should come out of today having at least a slightly better idea on. Lisa, do you want to read them or do you want to let people stare at them for a while? Does anyone want to comment and say they refuse to take on the assignments?
Well, why don't I just introduce the how to read the table?
Okay.
So again, Lisa for the transcript. So on the left side, the first column is, of course, the topics that ended up being objectives, where topic one is split out into the individual first review team recommendations. Across the top, of course, is everyone's name, review team member names. And then under your name, you'll see either a V or an A. V means you volunteered for that topic. A means you volunteered and were assigned to that topic. And the goal here was to, if you note the total assigned on the far right, to try to get teams of three and for some of the newer objectives, four, to participate in this first class planning for each of these topics. Assigning volunteers to topics, by and large, the leadership team chose from those who had volunteered, trying to have at least one member of the leadership team assist with each of these items, as well as two or three additional members of the review team, distributing the workload across people. If you look at the bottom row of the table, you'll see the number of subgroups, I guess it would be, that each of you are assigned to, with most people being assigned to three or four, and the leadership team actually picking up five or six largely because they needed representation on every of one of these efforts as a moderating role, or facilitating role, however you like to entitle that. You'll note that there is one case where the cell says ask under Lily's name. And Lily, that was because the leadership team identified a need for an additional person on the internationalization planning activity, and noting that you were only assigned to two teams at that point, suggested possibly you might be willing to volunteer to take on that third team as well. We had another area where
It's Alan, if I may intercede. Lily is also one of the few people on this group who actually use internationalized character sets, and therefore we need all the expertise we can on that one. Sorry, Lisa, go ahead.
No problem. And that, you'll notice, so in the far right, there's a cell that's marked a little bit orange for the IDN's row, and that reflects the need to either get the additional volunteer of Lily, or if she declines, to get a third person to volunteer for that. And then you'll see the same thing for the outreach recommendation 3 implementation. There were only two volunteers for that, and so the leadership team was hoping someone would volunteer to join that one as well. So that's how to read the table.
All right. If anyone has any comments now, fine. Otherwise, in the next couple of days, can you please send something to the list if you either want to add yourself to a list, one of the sections, because you believe you really want to participate in it, or if you want to claim that you really cannot do it or should not do it for some reason, please let it be known. And otherwise, we will presume this. We will formally adopt this at the next meeting. But we'd like to, you know, try to get any changes made to it as soon as possible. And Carlton says he'll take recommendation 3 on outreach. Thank you, Carlton. All right, seeing no more hands, no more comments, then we can take this with the modifications we've suggested as close to finalized, but we'll wait for any comments on email over the next couple of days. If I could ask someone on staff for an action item to send out a brief email for those who are not on the call, pointing out that they should make any comments by the, let's say, by the end of Monday, if they have any comments to either add themselves to a group they haven't been assigned to, or to claim there's some reason why they cannot do it. And I presume you'll make the necessary changes to the table before you send that out. And with that, I think we are finished that agenda item, unless anyone else has a comment to make, or Lisa, in case I missed anything. Yes, Erica, the revised version will be sent. You did receive a copy of this version in your email. I think actually two copies were sent out, but you will receive a revised version asking for other people's input. Volker, you're dropping early and noted. Thank you. The next item is work plan. Volker, if you're still with us, Volker's already gone, I see, so too late. The next item is work plan, and I think Alice will be presenting that. I suspect, although I may be wrong, that no one has put a lot of focus into looking at that. And I really think we need to, and we need to do it in some depth. I've gone through it, and I have a fair amount of concern that there are action items or items in the plan that we haven't really even thought of, and I'm not quite sure when we're going to do it, and I have a lot of concern over the detailed dates that are on some of these kind of things, and, you know, effectively saying that we are committing to them, and I don't feel very comfortable with some of these, and I'm not quite sure how to go forward, but I did want to raise that issue. And as an example, you know, near the bottom of the first section of plan review, there's an item of develop and adopt outreach plan, and with the target of doing it by the end of November. You know, define structure of subgroup reports by middle January. And, you know, I'm not sure we're really at the stage to do some of these things. The outreach plan, yes, I guess we need to talk about it, but I'm not sure we're going to finalize it. And so I really would like, I'm not worried about my particular concerns that I'm raising, but I really think everyone on this group needs to look at this table in some depth, and to what extent are we comfortable in making the commitments which it implicitly says we're making. And with that, I'll turn it over to Alice to review, you know, exactly what it says. And I'm not quite sure how we get sign-off from everyone, but I am noting that I don't feel comfortable with the level of detail that is both in the items, the vertical column, the number of items listed, and the dates associated with many of these. So, Alice?
Yes, thank you, Alan. So maybe I could walk all of you through the changes that were made since Brussels. All right, so first of all, we changed the completion percentages on row 11 and 12 to reflect the progress that was made in Brussels. So the methodology to prioritize the issues and the adopt framework for the scope, essentially. So these two were changed, and Jean-Baptiste, thank you for pointing that out on the screen. Okay, and the next change that was made is the completion date for row 13, 14, and 15. We now have November 24th as the completion date as agreed in Brussels. So that was one of the key updates that was asked on day one, I believe. And in the research studies bucket, thank you, Jean-Marie. We've changed the date to January 31st. As I know, some of you had some concerns with end of December as being established as the deadline for the background materials, data sources, as well as the need or not for a independent expert. And then the major change that was made to this document as well is that we included the topic buckets. The buckets, the workforces, subgroups, whatever you want to call them. Each of these have been assigned a work plan. It mirrors what we had in the first version. So there's no big surprises there. We did include the planning template, Catherine suggested to help set up these subgroups. It's actually in the admin. If you can scroll. Yeah, thank you very much. So in the administrative duties, as you will see in the comment box, we included a reference to the planning document that Catherine suggested. These are the changes that were made. I'm hearing some concerns from Alan, and Alan, if we can maybe collect all these concerns and see how we can address them. But essentially, we do have a template for the subgroup report, as indicated in Brussels, that we are going to share with you by the end of this week. And for the outreach plan, we were going to put something together based on your work plan discussions, outlining when your public comment period would take place, what outreach would that entail. Having outreach meetings at ICANN events or holding webinars. So we were going to prepare something as well to help guide that discussion. I'm happy to answer any additional questions there at this stage. Thank you.
Thank you, Alice. May I suggest then you underassign to when staff has a component and perhaps an initial component that you put staff, RDS review team or something like that?
Sure. Okay, yeah, it's actually in the comment box. If you look at the row comment, I can also provide a template. So we'll make that discussion.
Yeah, we'll make that distinction. We can abbreviate RDS Who Is Review Team, perhaps, and use the space more effectively.
All right, no problem.
I don't think there's any other review team that's doing it. This is perhaps an opportune time to mention that activities that are going on with regard to the SSR Security Stability and Resiliency Review Team. They did submit their terms of reference to the board. The board is effectively rejecting part of that, claiming that they have exceeded their scope. There is a letter has been written by the SSAC saying they believe, for the reasons the board has identified and other reasons, that the review team is doomed to failure on the path they're going. And just to highlight the fact that people are watching and are going to be scrutinizing us as well. Although I don't think we need extra scrutiny to be concerned about whether we do a good job or not, that is part of the world we're living in right now. And I think what we have to do is make sure that if we are making commitments that as we go forward, that we really have some understanding of them and agree as a group that this is the target. I mean, Alice and the staff team have done a lot of work and putting, numbers down and words down here, but I think we have to own them, and that requires essentially a level of comfort that I'm not sure we've put the effort into to get to achieving. So if anyone else has any thoughts on this, I'd really welcome them now. Otherwise, we will have as a homework assignment that people really, really do have to look at this in detail. Anyone have anything to say at this point? It is the Alan Greenberg Show, apparently. Nothing else, then let us go on to the next agenda item, which is terms of reference. And Lisa, I presume you will take us through this. I did go through the terms of reference in a fair amount of detail yesterday, and I did not have the time to document them, and I will send out a marked-up document perhaps after we get the next version presented to us. I do have some concerns, but I'll raise them as we go through them right now. Verbally, in any case.
Apologies.
Lisa,
this is Lisa. I believe that Alice was going to walk you through the changes that have been made to the terms of reference.
All right. And if perhaps we can sort of stop for a moment on each section, because if no one else does, I have some comments or questions. If we could have the document displayed.
Actually, I don't have a version for today, I'm afraid. It's going to be next week. But I think today's the objective of this was to discuss the consensus policy language that Susan sent around.
Sorry, Alice, you broke up. I didn't quite get that. And Carlton is asking, does the last terms of reference on the web on the wiki include the changes from Brussels? As far as I can tell, it does not.
Can you hear me now, Alan?
Yes, you're clear now.
Terribly sorry. I'm not sure what's going on my phone. I was saying, I'm afraid we don't have a final version up for review today. We're still working on integrating some of the comments. But I believe, based on our leadership staff conversation earlier this week, that the objective for today was to talk about the consensus policy language Susan and you, I believe, were working on. Does that ring a bell?
It does. Susan is not with us. I'll go on to that in a moment. I would like to raise a couple of issues as we go ahead and, anyway, let me just go through them. To start with, there's a huge amount at the beginning, a page essentially listing what ICANN's mission is and listing what contracted parties responsibilities are. Is that really necessary in this document? There's two to three pages of quoting what's in the bylaws, not explicitly on, or two and a half pages, not explicitly on what's in the bylaws for this review, but just what's in the bylaws regarding ICANN and implicitly, or although vaguely, talking about registration data services. And I'm just questioning whether that's really necessary. If it is, so be it. It just seems like we're adding a lot of pages that don't really add substance to our review. So I don't think we need any comment on it. But one might want to think about it. The next comment is on definitions, and we have asked several times, do we need any definitions? I think we do need to define RDAP because we do make reference to it on a regular basis. And Dimitri had suggested we define IDN, and Lisa, I guess, I'm not sure if it was Lisa or someone else, put a comment in that quoted the IDN definition from the, I guess, the ICANN dictionary or ICANN glossary, and I would suggest that we have a much abbreviated version. That version is over half a page long, and I think we need a much abbreviated version, not talking about how they're implemented in puny code and dashes, but just define what it is quickly, and we could have a URL pointing to the full definition if that's okay with people. Presume someone will either put up their hand or yell out if they disagree. There was a section saying we may choose to include additional terms as needed to reflect the review scope, and possible definition sources include all of the other PDPs that have been going on or are going on, the various other projects. And I'm happy, to be honest, to leave out additional exhaustive definitions. We may choose to put them into our a glossary in the report as we go forward. But unless I'm missing something, I don't see an awful lot of merit in spending a lot of time right now extracting definitions and adding what could well be pages of them. Does anyone disagree on that? Anyone have any thoughts? And Carlton says consumer definition can be listed from the CCTRT report. Carlton, I would question that because I think one of the deliverables that we are saying is we are going to we will define the consumer as part of our process. So I'm not sure we want to a priori put a definition in unless we're willing to take it out of the scope. Seeing no hands, I hear no objection. We haven't had a lot of suggestions on definitions, and I see no objections here that I would suggest we strike the highlighted paragraph, at least tentatively, and not plan on putting vast numbers of definitions in at this point. The next item is on deliverables and time frame. The scope, the terms of reference, list a timeline, a tentative timeline, which is for an 18-month review. Our fact sheet lists a 12-month review. As has been pointed out, we can say whatever we want and then deliver ahead of time, but the two should coincide with each other. And since I think we are targeting a 12-month review at this point and not longer, perhaps we want to adjust the timeline in the terms of reference to come closer to what it is in the fact sheet we're using. Does that sound like a reasonable target, Lisa or Alice, whoever's working on that, or Jean-Baptiste? I don't know.
Hi, Alan. Yes, we'll match what we have in the work plan.
Okay, thank you very much. And I believe, other than removing all the interims, I think that's the bulk of the substantive changes that I that I made. I will send out a document. Once you give us the next clean version, or the next version, I will mark that one up and send it out to the group. And I'll turn it over to Alice now to do what she was originally going to plan to do and highlight the changes.
Alice, thank you. As previously indicated, I don't have a final version for a discussion on this call this week. We will have one for next week's call, but we'll make all the changes you've just listed. We want to touch on the consensus policy language Susan put together. If you want us to display that in the room?
Yeah, I'm not. She sent out something late last night, and I did do a reply on it. Are you in a position to display what she sent? She sent it to the leadership team, not to the whole group. So
yes,
no one else has seen that at this point. If you're in a position to display it, then we can talk a little bit about it. Again, she's not on the call, and no one else has seen it yet, so I'm not sure we're really in a position to debate it at this point. But if you can display it, what she sent, then we can talk about it at least a little bit. I do have some concerns.
Okay. Let me get that up on the screen here.
While you're doing that, let me talk a little bit about it. If you've read the terms of reference, it uses the term full consensus, and a variety of other ones that are essentially drawn from the GNSO guidelines that have also been used by the cross-community working groups, I believe. They're done with the theory that the chair will make a call on whether there's consensus or not. Our terms of reference then goes into a fairly complex iterative process that if there is disagreement with the chair's call, that we attempt to do it over and over again until we get agreement. Following that, if people still agree, there is an escalation and appeal process that goes first to the board liaison, to the review team, Krista Spain in our case. And if there is then still disagreement between various parties, that it will then go to the Organizational Effectiveness Committee and the chair of the Organizational Effectiveness Committee to pass a final judgment. In an aid to try to define what we need, I suggested we might want to use as the first cut the percentage that the ALAC uses, that is 80% defines consensus. That is somewhat at odds with what is in our terms of reference, because the terms of reference explicitly say we may take polls on occasion, but we generally don't. And if you count yeses and noes to look for 80%, you're effectively taking a poll on everything. So there's that potential conflict. Susan came up with what you see on the screen now, and she added a complex of block, that is, someone who has a fundamental disagreement and goes on to say, if you scroll down, that if you have anyone who is blocking, that you do not have consensus, which essentially says the only definition of consensus is full consensus, where no one is disagreeing. You can have people who don't like it and sort of bow out of the discussion, but anyone can essentially veto by saying they block, which defeats the purpose of consensus not being requiring unanimity. So I think we really have to get down to what we're doing, and I wish Chris was on the call because he was the one who said we have to define it better. And yet the whole concept of consensus that has been used in the GNSO and follow-on processes implies you do not define it better, but use an iterative process with escalation and appeals to try to cover it. So I'm not quite sure where we go from here. And as I said, I wish Susan was on the call, but she isn't. Anyone have any thoughts? You haven't seen this before, and I've been talking a lot. Maybe I'll be quiet for a moment and let you read what's there. It's not very long. And if anyone else has any thoughts, then speak up, please. Because I think we're, I won't say a stalemate, but I'm somewhat confused. Catherine, please go ahead.
Yes, hi. Thank you, Alan. This is Catherine. It's just to say that I think, as Susan herself was saying, we probably need to flesh this out a bit further. But I think it leaves open this question of the 80 or whatever percent that we still need to figure out whether we want to agree on. I mean, I think that's, we can see whether we just want to go for something sort of intangible that's more a process. But then we still, independently of that, need to determine whether we set some sort of baseline percentage.
Yeah, but that does imply that we effectively are doing polls on everything. And I have no problem with that, but that is counter to the intent of the way this was described. I'm just noting that. I think we can live with anything, and I have no great desire to be, you know, the God figure who determines what consensus is and what isn't. But we need to agree on a set of rules that are consistent within themselves. And what is in the terms of reference right now is not consistent with the way we're talking. So,
I think if we go back to the bylaws, sorry, this is Catherine again, the idea is that we would strive for consensus, and if we cannot achieve consensus, then we have to look at a majority decision. So I think it is a bit consistent with, I mean, we have to expand what's there, but I don't think it means that we have to take a vote on every single issue. But maybe I'm misunderstanding how this would work.
Yeah, consensus in the context that it's used in the GNSO certainly is far stronger than a majority. And I will point out in the RDS, in the SSR review team, where I said there is some current dissension and disagreements, they are citing that they have made decisions by, and I quote, majority consensus, which we... those who I've talked to think that means majority, and that might lead to a problem if we only are, if you know, if that implies 40% or 45% of the group may disagree violently, and I think in ICANN's terms that's not consensus. Again, I can live with it, but
no.
I don't think that meets the original intent.
Right, but what I was—I mean, maybe it's—I still think of it as a two-step process. So if we have consensus on things, which means that nobody fundamentally disagrees, then we can move ahead without taking a vote. And if we fail to reach consensus, then there might be a vote or something majority where we can agree on a percentage. But then we wouldn't mix the two concepts of having a vote and having consensus.
Okay. And Erica is agreeing on that. I certainly don't think I could agree to the concept that Susan has presented, which says any given member has a complete veto over consensus, unless we do, as you just point out, have something to revert to in lieu of consensus. But that does go against all of the, you know, there's about a page and a half on appeals and escalation processes. And what you're saying essentially says we will replace that with a majority or supermajority or something vote. And again, I'm happy with that. Just think we need clarity and need to agree on it.
Yeah. No. Sorry, Alan. Just to come back, I think I'm not being very clear, but I don't think I'm saying we have to replace everything by a vote or by a majority. What I'm trying to say is that there should be consensus first off, which is sort of a more informal idea where if, you know, there's not a significant minority that significantly objects, then we're fine. And only if that is unclear whether we can get to a consensus, would we have to look at taking a vote? But
yeah, no,
misunderstanding.
No, I understood completely. What you're suggesting is we attempt to use some definition of consensus, be it the 80% rule or something else, And if we cannot achieve that, then we revert to a vote, as opposed to what the terms of reference currently say, of we revert to an iteration and iteratively going back and discussing it again and trying to come to consensus again with a different proposal, and barring that to escalate up to the board liaison and the organizational effectiveness committee. And I think what you're saying is if we cannot reach consensus, that we use essentially a vote of some sort with some threshold in lieu of consensus. Did I get that right?
Right.
Okay. So that is a departure from what is in the terms of reference. I think that's within our scope to do, but we have to decide to do that. Lisa, please go ahead.
Thank you. I just wanted to point out that I think in the way I read Susan's email, and I saw it for the first time when you did last night, is that she's describing how individuals might test for their own agreement, and then coming down to the point where 80% of the individuals actually having agreement, meaning consensus. But again, she meant this as input to a discussion, not to be taken at face value. I'm not sure that the interpretation that one person could block a recommendation is what she in fact meant.
I based that statement, and I agree that I like her concept of stands aside and reservations and agreement, but my concern was with the definition of block and her definition of consensus as no blocks. That was the point that I have concern with, because that seems to be at odds with 80% or 90% or whatever it is, implying consensus.
Yeah, I
so
agree.
Anyway,
we
really can't have
a
discussion without her. So I'm happy to say we've gone as far as we can, and we need to continue this discussion when Susan is with us. So we are starting to run out of time. We have 6 more minutes. We're going to go over implementation briefing questions. They have been distributed. If anyone has any concerns that we have got the questions wrong, please speak up. And I'll turn it over to Jean-Baptiste to confirm action items and decisions on this meeting.
Thank you, Alan. So the different action listed were, first, on the statement of interest, I can hope to clarify what is meant by sending electronically. On scope and objectives, Susan's lead discussion on a framework to measure and assess the effectiveness of review team 1 recommendations. I can hope to inventory changes made to WHOIS policies since the first review team completed. Lisa, Alan, and Erica to work together on wording for OECD guidelines version to be shared ahead of the next plenary meeting. I can hope to apply agreed edits to this table for redistribution. Lisa and Alan to draft text for an additional item that the review team will reflect the bylaws pertaining to RDS review. I can hope to clean the table to incorporate objective text into terms of reference. I can hope to send an email to those who are not on the call to confirm assignments. If any changes are needed, I can hope to make the necessary changes. I can hope to update and resend table of assignments to review team, requesting any changes be suggested no later than Monday. Also send an email to those who are not on the call to confirm assignments. If any changes are needed, I can hope to make the necessary changes in advance of next call. I can hope to add definition of RDAP, remove text on mission, shorten IDN definition, and add definition of consumer from the CCTRT. And finally, I can hope to adjust and match timeline in terms of reference to 12 months.
Yeah, the second to last one, add consumer, I don't believe, as I said in the chat, I don't believe we can do that if we leave in as a target in that scope item, and I think we have as a target to define consumer. Let me see. Agreeing to... part A of the scope item is agreeing on the working definition of consumer and consumer trust. So I don't think it makes sense to have the definition of consumer. Clearly, we can be informed by what the CCTRD did and may well adopt it. But I don't think we can do more than that unless we change the scope item. Carlton? I'm reverting to the text and make adjustment as appropriately. I'm not sure I know what that means. Are you in a position to speak? While we're waiting for Carlton, does anyone have any AOB items? Lisa, please go ahead.
Thank you, Alan. I just wondered if Jean-Baptiste could very briefly display the questions that were raised on briefings and if we can get a target date for when any further refinements to that might be needed so the folks who will answer the questions can go ahead and start working on them.
You've now sent them out. I would give people till, let's say, end of Tuesday, if that's okay. Carlton in the chat basically says he's withdrawing the add definition of consumer to the CC to the terms of reference because it is in our scope. So we can just remove that item. All right. Anything else before we adjourn the call? Hearing nothing, seeing nothing, thank you all for your participation and look forward to seeing you online. We do have to ramp up our use of the mailing list or we're not going to be able to meet our targets here. So I think we need to start participating and not just wait for the meetings to comment. Thank you all. Have a good day and whatever is left of it for you. And look for you online. Bye-bye.